Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Ben Flanagan of AL.com. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films.
Hey, Ben, what's up?
Hey, man.
So we just caught new Spielberg. It's like, again, we say this about a lot of directors, but it should probably, for real, be a national holiday when a brand new Spielberg movie comes out. And we saw Ready Player One, and we both liked it. I liked it maybe a little more than you did, and we're going to get into Ready Player One pretty specifically, but I think it's going to speak to a larger discussion about Spielberg protagonists. And there's a lot to say. There are obviously a lot of classic characters throughout his filmography, and he's obviously famous for putting ordinary men and women in extraordinary situations, and let's be honest, it's usually men. The term everyman is often bandied about when you're talking about Spielberg's work. Sometimes there are legendary or superhuman characters who are his protagonists, who he attempts to find more humanity in than we might see on the surface. But let's talk about Ready Player One first, in terms of its protagonist here, this character, Wade Watts, played by Ty Sheridan. He was kind of an issue for you when it came to Ready Player One, wasn't he?
Yeah, I did like the movie a lot, but I just lacked a central connection to the movie, and I think a lot of it has to do because this character is... We're introduced to him, first of all, in a voiceover. So I think that, A, that's a script issue where this guy is just telling us everything we need to know about him and about the world around him directly to us. And so it just felt like a narrator. And then it just felt like the narrator happened to be a character in this movie. There wasn't anything compelling about this guy. There wasn't anything... The Ty Sheridan performance wasn't given an awful lot to work with. And then the digital version of the character, Parzival, looked like the Na'vi version of Eddie Furlong from Terminator 2. So there's just an overall aesthetic and character element that was missing from this character. And when I started looking at this film in the pantheon of Spielberg movies, as I do every time I see a new Spielberg movie, I just realized that, hey, this guy is so much less interesting than almost every other character in any other lead character in any other Spielberg movie, that I think this is why, one of the reasons this movie doesn't really work for me. And I mean, you mentioned it up top, but I mean, we are very spoiled. Just a few months ago, I saw a brand new Spielberg movie in the theater, and it featured one of the most compelling lead characters in a Spielberg movie ever, one of his rare female protagonists in The Post. And so I think it's just this script and this source material and this concept. I think it was lacking an entry point. I think that's a testament. The opening is a testament to that, because there's just so much info to throw at you that they just couldn't figure out a good perspective for the movie, so they just kind of loaded it all on this this kind of flat, bland character, and you know, hope that we would enter this world through his eyes and be interested. And there's a lot of interesting things in this movie. I mean, King Kong and Mechagodzilla and other characters that are very interesting, but our lead is not that.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. You know, I think that the character is likable enough to root for. He's a decent guy. He wants to do the right thing. He wants to help others. You know, like he's fine, but you're right. He's pretty nondescript. And I think that's an issue that you face when you go for casting a protagonist, or again, this sort of everyman type character where it's just an ordinary person. Well, the ordinary person is typically pretty flawed, right? And they have demons and they have a lot of stuff to work through that gives them depth and more personality. And that's not always the case with Wade Watts.
But he's not ordinary. He's like really good at this video game.
Right, but I mean, ordinary people are pretty good at video games, you know? I mean, he's obviously very good, but... I mean,
yeah, but we don't know why. Like, it's
yeah,
not
yeah
like
I agree
it's,
with that.
It's not and, like it's Harry Potter. You know, Harry Potter is like, comes from this, like, lineage, and he's
right.
good at everything. You know, there's this term that pops up called the Mary Sue term or whatever. Or, you know, Rey
right.
in The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi. You know, she's good at everything, and we don't really know why, but guess what? There's something compelling to her, and there's a survivor quality to her, and there's a there's something there that she immediately, you know, helps BB-8, and I mean, I go to probably the closest character to this to Wade Watts and Spielberg's filmography might be Tintin from The Adventures of Tintin. He is a pretty flat character, and we see more interesting parts of the world and more interesting characters through his eyes, but immediately in that film, we're struck with how perceptive and resourceful and eventually active that this guy is. Whereas with Wade Watts, I don't know, it just feels like a guy who really likes this game, who knows a lot about what this other guy likes a lot, and then he just kind of stumbles upon through no curiosity or flaw or perk of his personality quirk of his own, stumbles upon this adventure. It's almost like the adventure started long before the movie started, and he's just like, oh yeah, I'm gonna do this now, you know?
Like, yeah,
now we're tuning into the part where I'm good at this.
Yeah, I don't know how you saw anything through Tintin's dead mocap eyes, but for you now, you're right. Like, I agree. A qualm that I have, again, there are definitely reasons to nitpick this movie, and this is one of them. There's not a lot of depth. There's not a lot of backstory that Wade Watts could have used. I mean, it could have taken one or two pieces of information that would have, like you said, it would have clicked with us, and we would have thought, okay, that makes sense. Like, why he loves this game, why he plays this game, how he can play this game. I remember thinking, like, this movie was sort of marketed as kind of a quasi Willy Wonka adventure,
yeah.
Right? Where it used bits from the Willy Wonka score and the
clearly, yeah.
The Halliday character has kind of a Willy Wonka quality to him. And
well, Spielberg wanted to cast Gene Wilder early.
Well, there you go. So yeah, he's like leading these kids through this quest, you know, and so there are a lot of parallels there. One of them I thought that might come up, and this is just my own stuff that I'm dealing with here. It's like, well, why not parallel Wade with Charlie in that
yeah.
Charlie was a poor kid who had few opportunities. He had a lot on his plate in terms of being a caretaker for his poor family. And then this opportunity just happens upon him, which also happens to be like the biggest wish that he has in his entire life. And the biggest aspiration that he has, and he gets this opportunity and makes the most of it, right? Where he's this ordinary kid who, under most circumstances, would have no business being a part of this adventure, but boom, here it is. And so I think, like, there's a big opportunity to draw that parallel again with Wade, right? It's like, again,
and you're also, with Charlie, you're from the beginning, you see he's surrounded by people that love him and want
right.
the best for him. You know, so you have this rooted interest in this guy, and you want him to succeed, but this guy, we don't really even meet his family until a few scenes into the movie, and then it's like, well, but they're kind of jerks. Like, whenever, spoilers, but like, whenever he gets mad at the bad guy, he's like, you killed my mom's sister. It's like, no, that's your aunt.
You're right.
The word for that is aunt.
That's right.
Why you say that? Like,
that's exactly what I thought. It's like, okay,
yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess it may imply that there's not that connection between the two of them, but he obviously, in that moment, cares that his family member has just been murdered, right? But then that's, like, literally
right.
the last we hear about it. And
yeah.
So, yeah, it's strange. I mean, you mentioned Eddie Furlong earlier, so, I mean, that kind of reminds me of his foster parent situation in Terminator 2, right, where they have these people who don't really care a whole lot about him. They're kind of jerks, and they're not really connected emotionally. And so there, I guess, you know, it could work in that regard, but she's still family, and I think that there's a moment where she sort of expresses concern for him, and,
yeah.
and there might be some, but there wasn't enough, you know? It's like, okay, that's his family, I guess, and that's his situation, but you know, my issue is like, is sort of with the stakes of this movie, especially connected to the Wade Watts character, and why, basically why he's there. Why, like, why is he playing this game? Why does he have access to it? Why does everybody in the stacks and all in the seemingly low income apartment complex, why do they have access to this seemingly very expensive piece of software? And what makes him special, right? Like, I don't think that it's necessarily expressed why he's such a special video game player in terms of like, oh, okay, well, he just looked where nobody else looked. Well, why wouldn't other people look there? Like, what gave him that clue other than, oh, it just came to me, you know? So, no, I agree, you know, but, and I like Ty Sheridan. I think, you know, kind of like,
absolutely.
I think he has star quality, you know, like, I think it's there, and Hollywood obviously thinks the same. He's been cast in a lot of movies, and he's got big opportunities, obviously leading a Spielberg movie, and I think he does a good job, but you're right. The material itself might not be super, there might not be a lot to pull from, but again, I think that you take a big risk in terms of playing it safe with this, again, this would-be everyman type of hero, and you're right, he's not necessarily an everyman because he's talented, he's really talented, and he's really good at this stuff without much explanation, but I look back on Spielberg's filmography and look, and I'm trying to think of some of the sort of flatter characters, or maybe some characters that people have had issues with in the past. The one that springs to mind is not necessarily the protagonist of the movie, but he plays a crucial role. And I just remember thinking, wow, this is one of the flattest characters in Spielberg's entire filmography. It's the Brad Johnson actor who plays the character in the movie Always, basically Hollywood's new beau that takes the place of Richard Dreyfuss. I just remember thinking, like, wow, this dude is a bore, man. Like, this has to be one of the most boring characters in Steven Spielberg's whole career. And then the first one that sprung to mind, just because we're talking about teenage white protagonists in recent Spielberg works, is the character Albie in War Horse, obviously played by Jeremy Irvine. And, you know, you and I were texting about that not long ago, and you kind of – and I totally agree with you. Like, I'm just thinking about essentially, like, the physical appearance of these characters. And there are differences. I mean, there's so much more to the Albie character in terms of that depth we were talking about. From the get-go, you see his humble beginnings, what his family is fighting for, their aspirations, what they need, why they need his help.
His first shot in War Horse is a close up of his eyes, and he's like staring in wonder at this horse, and so you immediately empathize with this character because it's like, okay, this is a guy that appreciates this thing, and is an enthusiast for this thing. You know, there's a sense of awe and beauty and wonder and appreciation in him that it kicks off. I mean, yeah, there's other things too. But, like, you know, you immediately have some sort of emotional investment in this character, and that's just from a single shot. So, yeah, and then of course, he has a very clear, as soon as you get a little bit of context of his family, he has a very clear, you know, motivation with his rift with his father and finding out his father's trauma and kind of him having to go relive that in a certain way. There's so much there that this movie doesn't have. Obviously, there are different movies with different stakes, but yeah, I mean, the Always character is interesting, but he's in that movie, he's almost a device. He's almost like the pilot character in Bridge of Spies, which in my brain, those two actors look exactly, are basically the same guy. You know, it's just like a square-jawed American guy.
Right.
But they are, I feel like they're kind of devices so that the lead character pops, you know?
Yeah.
It's
a catalyst to help the character move forward.
Right. Which is, it's the reverse here, you know? It's like in this movie, in Ready Player One, Wade Watts is a device so that Artemis and Halliday can have their catharsis, you know, their story arcs. Because they are by far the more interesting characters.
Yeah, I feel like those actors you're talking about look exactly like Ben Mendelsohn's avatar in Ready Player One.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So
Matt texted me and he was like, hey, was that supposed to be Bizarro Superman?
Who was it? Was it? I mean, was it like...
No, it was supposed to be like a Batman the Animated 2 mobster
character. Okay, so it was not a specific video game character to your knowledge?
Look, I don't know. I'm the last person to ask, but I don't think so. It definitely wasn't a Superman character.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do you see this movie and this character opening up a little bit more for you on repeat viewing? You've only seen it the one time. When you typically watch Spielberg movies again, especially ones that don't quite click with you, and that's obviously rare with this director, and you're such a big fan. Do you feel like it's possible that something could change next time?
Here's the thing that usually clicks for me is kind of the theme of this movie, which is authorial intent and digging through a creator's work to find the personal thing. And that's usually what clicks for me in a Spielberg movie. It's rare for me to see a movie not connect with it and then for a perspective or protagonist reason and then like that character more and more over time. It's just like, in real life, sometimes you hit it off with people and then that's it. And then some people you don't, and that's okay. You just don't necessarily aren't going to go hang out with them all the time. But in his movies, what clicks and what makes me revisit them more often is when there's a theme that kind of clicks for me and I'm like, oh, okay. And then that's what I kind of revisit in the way that he weaves it in and out. And I see that here. And I feel like, there's a film critic and a film producer I know, his name is Ben Umstead, and he posted a review to Letterboxd, and he kind of brought up this idea that this is it might be a Paul Verhoeven-esque satire. And I feel like there might be something to that. I feel like Spielberg has such a natural distance just because of age from this video game, pop culture, saturated culture, that was a poorly phrased sentence, but that I think that there's potential for a satirical bent to this that we might be missing or that might not be obvious. And a lot of people would argue that, oh, Spielberg's, there's this dumb popcorn director that doesn't put subtext in his movies. And to that, I would ignore whoever says that because clearly they haven't watched a Spielberg movie, which there's always at least like three layers to almost every scene. But so I feel like if I revisit this movie, it may be I will revisit this movie as I revisit this movie. If it grows in my estimation, I think that it'll probably have a lot to do with that element, the thematic elements. But yeah, I don't see a reality in which Parzival eventually becomes one of my favorite Spielberg characters alongside James Donovan and Indiana Jones and Henry Thomas and E.T. I don't know if I can ever really relate or sympathize with a character who would design that avatar for himself. He wears a jeans vest. It's a vest of a jeans jacket.
Would Samantha / Artemis or
right.
one of Wade's other friends have made a better protagonist for this movie than him?
Sure. I think the 11-year-old kid would have been like an excellent protagonist. And in a way that would have made more sense because towards the end of this movie, whenever Simon Pegg shows up, you really do get that Willy Wonka kind of vibe. It's Amblin, I mean, from Alan Silvestri's score to just kind of the realization that these stakes, aside from like the gun that Ben Mendelsohn is wielding, the stakes are fairly low. And really, this is just a bunch of ragtag kids helping a dead millionaire make peace with himself, make peace with his decisions. And that's like the plot of the Goonies or something like that. That's like, this is very much a 80s Amblin movie. And so I feel like maybe Ty Sheridan was a little old for this role. Maybe it should have been a little kid who is a Harry Potter type orphan, but then in this universe, he can be a superhero, you know,
right.
whatever. And that's I guess that's another thing. It's like Ty Sheridan is a good looking guy, you know. He's like he's more handsome than his avatar. So it's like what fantasy is he living out in this world? I think in the book he may be like overweight or something like that, and so like maybe they should have cast. Maybe it's the casting where you look at Ty Sheridan and you're like, this guy seems like a nice guy. He's like, it's totally, what is this guy escaping from? You know,
so they should have
never,
they should have de-aged Paul Giamatti to a teenager.
There you go. Or the, yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, you know, that's been an issue with Spielberg before where he casts, obviously, like Tom Cruise as a blue collar.
Nope.
Lower middle class.
That, here you go. All right. Let's get into this argument.
That's, right.
That's look, go to Boston. And I promise you, the guy that's driving around the muscle car, like doing like wheel, you know, power slides around the corner and wearing baseball hats, I bet you he's not going to look like Paul Giamatti. That guy's probably going to have tattoos. He's probably going to go to CrossFit. This guy, I mean, Tom Cruise is excellent casting for that because he's this jock dummy that is, he's a kid. He's like a teenage kid.
Well, I think it doesn't really matter because we get into the actual substance of the character, and like once you start to understand, like again, what his objectives and goals and everything are, he cares about his children. He wants to save his children. He wants to be better connected to them, and that's executed in the performance by Tom Cruise. So it works, you know. So if there's
not a flaw to begin with. That's what I'm saying.
But I see what people are saying in that they're just kind of distracted by a Hollywood superstar like Tom Cruise playing this role. I understand why that might be. So
but that's it.
That
he was probably like the star, you know, pitcher or whatever in high school. Like that's it. He's the star of his community, and he hasn't gotten over that. Like
I mean, did you
I don't know, like throw, everything about
him,
that.
Did you see him throw that movie though? I don't think he pitched.
Look, I don't know anything about baseball. I'm surprised they knew what a pitcher was. No, but I mean, when I first saw that movie, that like screamed out to me, like this guy drives a Mustang and power slides it around the corner to get to his house. Like, yeah, exactly. Of course he looks like Tom Cruise. Of course he doesn't need to be a good dad because he doesn't need to be because he's got a shining smile that he gets away with everything. And, these aliens aren't going to let him get away with anything. He's actually got to own up. Like that's the arc. If he had been played by Paul Giamatti, it would have been really sad, you know. It wouldn't have made any sense. It needed to be somebody that would needed to get cut down to size.
Right.
And that's not a Tom Cruise joke.
Right. And then you have Leonardo DiCaprio in Catch Me If You Can, again, a young, super good-looking superstar whose character actually has to, like, use his looks to an extent,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
In terms of
absolutely.
His
charmer.
Yeah, his con jobs and everything. So, you know, there are different reasons to cast, you know,
well, here's
people who look a certain way.
You know, Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones is you know the coolest man that's ever lived, but
right.
there's something missing. You know, you mentioned flaws earlier. You know,
he's a dork in that movie, in that whole series.
He's
a total nerd.
Yeah, he's incomplete, and he's rash, and he doesn't plan very well, and he says, I mean, it's in the first movie. He says, "I'm making this up as I go," and he just doesn't think about anything. And I mean, I think that seems like the theme. One of the character themes of Ready Player One. I mean, the first song of the film is Jump by Van Halen. And then it ends up being kind of like the thing that Halliday didn't do is he didn't make a leap. You know, I think he even says that at one point. He didn't like jump into life and really experience it. He kind of kept everything at bay. And it's like, well, there you go. There's your arc. You know, you make Wade Watts like that, where he's like, he's just afraid to risk anything in the real world. But in this other world, he's willing to do anything. And then at the end of the movie, he has to maybe make a literal leap to do something. But no, he just does the thing he's supposed to be doing, which is play this game. And then his like hero line to the girl is like, "I'm not like Halliday. I'm going to kiss you now." Like, what? Like, don't just say it out loud. Like, you can't do that. What if, I don't know. Again, it comes down to the screenplay. I mean, I think we know from all of Spielberg's, you know, more troubled productions that he's a guy that he is going to get to sit and shoot what's written. And if it's not worked out then, it's like, well, too bad. Like, I got to be a director now. And you look at Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, or Always, maybe, in some cases, or 1941. Did I say Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade?
Yeah.
I meant Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. These movies that have, you know, scripts that, maybe I'll just use that in 1941 and I guess The Lost World. Like, those scripts are definitely troubled and have some issues. And he wasn't going to sit around on set and improv with the actors and figure out what's going on in the scene. And he sure as hell wasn't going to, you know, tell the studio to butcher the ending and make it work like a World War Z or something like that. He was just going to say, look, this is a script we got. We're going to shoot it. And everything that's not the script is going to be badass. But, you know, here we are. And I feel like that's the situation here, is that you've got a script written by the author of the book, who's surely going to be kind of precious with his material. And then Zach Penn, who's not a bad screenwriter, but he's kind of the screenwriter that would put the line in, I'm not like Halliday, or the scene where they trick Ben Mendelsohn's character into thinking he's in reality, but he's else actually not. And that happens, and it's like, oh, that's a cool little twist. And then there's like a dialogue scene where they're explaining that's what happened and that's what they're doing. And it's like, no. you don't have to tell us this. Stop telling us everything. And it's a script thing. I think they just needed to give it to David Koepp or something, and or Margot maybe, and get some really realistic dialogue in there.
Yeah, Margot has some stuff to say about it.
Do a polish on this thing, man.
Yeah, well, we're gonna silence her voice and not let her weigh in on this today. I think it's important that we probably cut this short now, because Margot probably has too much to say about it. We're gonna look at the baby movie blog. Redirect you to that. We'll link to that in the notes for this show. So anyway, well, cool, man. I don't think I'm convinced yet that this movie sucks like you are. But yeah, I have similar qualms, and it's interesting just to kind of like place Ty Sheridan and Wade Watt in the sort of broader landscape as Spielberg protagonists. And I guess he ranks pretty low in the power rankings at this point.
Yeah, he ain't no Roy Neary, that's for sure.
No, that's true.
Or Chief Brody. Yeah, and I mean, but again, like, I mean, we're spoiled, you know, we're spoiled. This is the kind of thing we can talk about when we get two Spielberg movies in the span of 3 months, you know. And again, just everybody go see the post, you know.
Yeah, it's still there.
It's too. It's fantastic. But, you know, like, look at this guy. Look at what he can do. He can make this movie in the post in the span of a year. Like, it's not fair. We don't deserve this.
Well, I would encourage people to see Ready Player One too. Like,
me too. Absolutely. And definitely see it on the big screen, because the visuals are just incredible. I mean, it's too much to process, really. And there's scenes in this movie that I plan on just watching on loop, you know, once I have it at my fingertips. It just won't be any of the dialogue scenes.
Well, just real quick answer this before we go. What was the last Spielberg movie that had you sort of second guessing it, or that just didn't totally click for you the first time you saw it?
Definitely the BFG. But I feel like that movie has a heart to it and a central theme, but it's these CGI faces. I think at the end of the day, it's just Tintin is okay with me because it's consistent and it's like, it has like an organic unity to the whole thing. And the action scenes are so engaging and the script is so engaging that it gets a pass for me. But the BFG character and the Parzival and the Artemis and the CGI imps, and I don't know, I'm getting old or something, I don't know, something's happening. I can't deal with it.
Well, try to work it out until the next one.
Until CGI Indie in 2019.
It's coming.
2020.
It's coming.
There's a conversation down the road, is how Spielberg's last few movies impact our expectations for that movie. But we'll see.
All right. We'll get there.
All right, man. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for doing that.
Sure. Just, I guess send it to me and I'll post it probably at lunchtime.
All right. Sounds good, man.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.